Welcome to Brighty on Broadcast News with Mike Adams, the Health Ranger.
Wow, what an extraordinary time to be alive. Welcome to Brighty on Broadcast News for Thursday, March 20th, 2025. I'm Mike Adams, and today we're going to be bringing you shocking news about a new discovery of what is underneath the Giza Pyramid Complex. There's an outstanding video report by Greg Reese that we're going to play for you, and additional details about this shockingly large substructure where the pyramids that we see are just the tip of a much larger structure that goes as deep as 2 kilometers. So this is not human. All right, we're going to talk about this is not built by people. and the implications of this are really extraordinary. So we're going to get to all that. Okay, also today we've got an interview with Jeremy Corden from the Goldback Company, and it's really the most important time to talk about gold because gold has just skyrocketed through $3,000 an ounce, and it just hit $3,057. It didn't even slow down at the low 3,000s. I mean, it just shot up to $3,057. And of course, it's settled slightly since then, at least as I'm recording this. But you remember me saying, you know, just in the last few weeks, gold's going to skyrocket past $3,000 an ounce, no question about it. Well, I talked to the people that I know in the gold retail industry, and they say that consumer retail demand in the U.S. is still kind of soft. But gold retail demand in other countries, such as Thailand, for example, in Middle Eastern countries and so on, even in India, is much stronger than it is relative to the United States right now. So who's buying all the gold? Well, of course, it continues to be the big institutional buyers and the family funds that know what is about to happen. And there are many scenarios that we've talked about where the dollar, in essence, its purchasing power collapses because of the mass printing of dollars. You know, we talked about CDOs and CLOs earlier this week. And remember, CDOs is collateralized debt obligations, right? And CLOs are collateralized loan obligations, which is all this debt to commercial entities that's all about to explode because, what was it, $3.8 trillion of it was variable interest rate loans. And this is why so many retailers are going bankrupt right now. And this is about to blow up in our faces. So that's one thing. Then we've also got this crazy escalation of war in the Middle East. Just in the last 24 hours, Israel bombed and killed another, 130 plus civilians in Gaza. And Trump and Rubio and others are just all in with just give Israel everything they need, you know, more bombings. And it looks like the U.S. military is positioning itself to attack Iran. And we're not going to go into all those details today. It's too detailed to cover all the possible scenarios there that could play out, that many of which are probably unexpected by the U.S. military because of Iran's acquisition of technology from Russia in particular. But no matter what happens, you know, gasoline's going to go through the roof. You're going to have massive money printing, and that's going to devalue the dollar even more. So right now, as we're looking at gold at $3,000 an ounce plus, you know, $3,057 an ounce, it's not hard to see that gold is going to hit $5,000 an ounce at some point. I mean, Peter Schiff has always been right about this. It's going to hit $5,000 an ounce. And there are scenarios where it does that this year. I'm not predicting for sure it's going to happen this year, but clearly there are scenarios where it does. Not because gold is getting more valuable, but because dollars are losing value. There's going to be a financial wipeout of people who are just left holding, you know, fiat currency. That's absolutely about to happen. But back to the Giza Pyramids topic, you know, there are many secrets about history that we are not allowed to see. And the recent JFK file release was incomplete, of course. There are files that were not released, and many people say that Israel is implicated in some of these documents, and other people talk about the CIA And it might have been the CIA working with the Mossad, which, of course, happens all the time. And LBJ was involved, according to Roger Stone and many other analysts. You know, LBJ was sworn in as president after JFK was assassinated, and LBJ was probably complicit in the killing of JFK. And JFK, of course, he wanted to get us off the Federal Reserve fiat currency fake money system and get us to a United States dollar rather than a Federal Reserve note. Okay, so the reason that he was killed, I mean, I'm sure there were multiple reasons, but one of them was because he was a threat to the globalist banking cartel, which occupies America and rules over America as the Federal Reserve. So there are lots and lots of documents that you are not allowed to see, obviously. And there are portions of history that you are not allowed to know. But some of this is beginning to be disclosed. This is a common theme today. So you may recall I did a song a couple of days ago, which I thought was just a joke. And it was called, You Ain't Gonna Get It. And I really threw that together in just literally, I think, 3 minutes. I just wrote out the lyrics and I played that song for you here on the podcast. And it turned out that that song was really popular. And people were asking for a standalone video of that song because they wanted to share it with other people. And then it turned out that people wanted to hear it on Spotify, etc. So I went ahead and I extended that song with another verse. And we put together a really simple music video, which is mostly just still images of a sexy young rhythm and blues music artist singing on a microphone in a nightclub. That's pretty much what these images are. So we didn't put a ton of time into it, but the song is extended now, and it's incredibly right on the mark for what we are talking about today here. You know, the secrets you're not supposed to know. So here's the new song and music video called You Ain't Gonna Get It. That's the official title now, You Ain't Gonna Get It. And it's a little over 2 minutes or 2.5 minutes, whatever it is. And it's got an added verse now. And yes, the voice is AI. This is one song that finally people aren't asking me if it's my voice because it's clearly not a male. So but what's funny about this song is that it's so seductive in terms of the voice and singing style. And I intentionally made it with a play on words with kind of sexual innuendo where the female, the seductive singer is singing that you ain't gonna get it. And, you know, there's a double meaning in that. She's talking about the Epstein documents, but other people might be thinking about something else. When a woman says, you ain't gonna get it, you got nothing yet, and you just ain't gonna get it, you know? So it's funny, you know, I like to put comedy into these songs. And this is definitely very funny. People are laughing with me at this song, and they're shocked at how great it sounds in terms of professional audio quality. And of course, I built this with Suno.com. That's S-U-N-O, if you want to check it out. And I've become pretty adept at prompt engineering and describing songs and building lyrics and so on. So it didn't take me that long to put this together. But here you go. Here's the official video now for You Ain't Gonna Get It.
You ain't gonna get those Epstein files yet. They haven't been redacted, but all them still be acting. Where those JFK docs, spend your day watching clocks. All us still be waiting, is our trust mistaken? You ain't gonna see it, you're stupid to believe it. You'll never see those files, cause deep state wearing smiles. You ain't gonna get those Epstein files. All them still be acting. You ain't gonna get disclosure files yet. There won't be no peeking of secrets they be keeping. Where those secrets all go, we're not supposed to know. You'll never see those dockets, 'cause deep state gonna block it. You ain't gonna see it, you're stupid to believe it. You'll never see those files, 'cause deep state wearing smiles. You ain't gonna get those Epstein files yet. They haven't been redacted, but all them still be acting.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that song there. I certainly enjoyed putting it together. And I found a special niche here, which is creating songs about the news of the day. Like, what's the big news item today? Or what's going viral on X? Or what's on people's minds? You know, I'm talking about people like us who are concerned about the future of humanity and freedom and liberty and exposing corruption in the government, you know, and ending vaccine mandates and all this nonsense. So what's on our radar today, right? And yesterday it was Tesla's being set on fire. So I had the song yesterday called, Baby Don't Burn My Tesla, right? And that was funny because the AI engine would only render gay couples for the music video. The people who buy Teslas, are they all gay couples? What's going on? Anyway, that's what the AI engine thought. And in the final music video that I ended up publishing yesterday, it's still a gay-looking dude, but whatever. We actually had to re-render a lot of frames, a lot of elements of that. But that dude, he still looks gay, even though he wasn't kissing another dude in my music video, but he was in the initial render, okay? Because that's Tesla, the car of gay dudes. Well, it used to be, not anymore. Now maybe the gay dudes are setting fire to their Teslas. But anyway, so the big news right now is that there's a judicial coup taking place in America. And these crazy, insane left-wing judges, they are issuing these insane orders. For example, ordering Trump to reinstate all of USAID. So that multi-billion dollar slush fund that has been exposed and ripped to shreds, and 83% of it was shut down, a judge orders Trump, put it all back, hire all the people back, open it back up, reinitiate all the money, all the slush fund money, all of it. That's been done. And I read in the news today that, in fact, there's a CEO now in charge of USAID, and he's bringing it all back. Like, what? Well, I would imagine that White House attorneys are working on some kind of strategy here, because obviously this cannot be allowed to continue. This is the money laundering cartel for the Democrats, okay? So it's got to be stopped. But the White House is going to have to issue a strongly worded opinion letter and set up a Supreme Court showdown. And I'm not sure how that's going to go, because you've got John Roberts, who's a traitor, and you got Amy Coney Barrett, who also seems to have turned against the founding principles of America. She's always voting with the Democrats. So this is going to lead to a very bad place, probably. And that place may be something like, well, if the judges are shut down, then the left is going to lose their minds and they're going to start a civil war, like a real full-blown civil war, you know, with gunshots and everything. And firebombing, you know, their targets, all that. I mean, kinetic civil war is what the left will turn to. They'll have nothing left. Or if Trump is overruled and if all the slush fund money has to be restored, then America's done. Then the judicial traitors will have overthrown the country. And that can't be allowed to happen. At that point, Trump has to arrest them. He has to arrest them or impeach them or somehow remove them from power, because you can't sit back and do nothing while your country is overruled by treasonous left-wing occupying judges that demand that you continue the money laundering operations. You have to stop them. And that will force Trump into a position of some options that are difficult options, but they will have to be pursued if we're backed into that corner. And then the backlash from the left will probably lead to a civil war anyway. So I'm not sure that we can avoid a civil war here. But since this is the big topic of the day, I did create a song. And it's called Boot Them Judges. Okay? So I'm really having fun with this hip-hop style of essentially like black female rap vocals that I also augment in the prompt as being nasty and sassy, which really helps. And you'll hear in a second. So I created a new song. We don't have a music video for it yet. I'm just going to play the audio for you, and we'll just do a screen capture of music.brighteon.com, which is where all these songs will be soon, and you'll be able to download the MP3 files there. But check out this new song called Boot Them Judges, and it's funny. It's funny too. Well, I think it's funny. You tell me if you think it's funny. But I did play it for Dean Ryan on his show, and everybody was laughing. They were having a great time. So enjoy Boot Them Judges.
We gotta boot them judges. Judges with their grudges. Some judges try to shove us. They wanna get rid of us.
We gotta boot them judges. Judges with their grudges. Some judges try to shove us.
They think they sit above us.
Them judges look like Tito's, cheese, pizza, Doritos. They visit children's beaches wearing nasty ass Speedos. Them judges rule like tyrants, piss on us like fire hydrants. They ruling for the migrants that are causing the violence.
We gotta boot them judges. Judges with their grudges. Them judges try to shove us. They wanna get rid of us.
We gotta boot them judges. Judges with their grudges. Them judges try to shove us.
They think they sit above us.
Tyrants blocking freedom. That slush money feeds them. Kickbacks and them bribes keep those traitors alive. They pushing for invasion. They hate this whole nation. Judicial counterfeiting. They do the devil's bidding.
Judges with their grudges. Them judges try to shove us. They wanna get rid of us.
We gotta boot them judges. Judges with their grudges. Them judges try to shove us.
They think they sit above us.
Them judges look like pedos, cheese, pizza, Doritos. They visit children's beaches wearing nasty ass Speedos.
Them judges rule like tyrants, piss on us like fire hydrants. They ruling for the migrants that are causing the violence.
Boot them judges to the street. Make America complete.
You wanna make something of us, then we gotta boot them judges.
Boot them judges.
Judges with their grudges.
Boot them judges.
Pull them weeds out from the roots.
Okay, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that song, Boot Them Judges. That hip-hop style, by the way, is typically considered a West Coast style, but the hi-hat pattern is also really indicative of East Coast hip-hop. But the low bass lines and the melodic groove is very typical of West Coast hip-hop, which I actually prefer West Coast hip-hop style. I mean, since we're talking music, you know, there's a lot of different styles of hip-hop or trap-hop or just trap, as it's sometimes called, whatever. But I really find the melodic lead with a strong bass line of West Coast rap, like, or West Coast hip-hop, that is personally my favorite hip-hop style. So anyway, when we do get a music video together for this, we'll put that out there and we'll share that with you. And I don't plan to do a song every single day. It's just when there are, you know, compelling topics, then I'm definitely going to do that. So now let's pivot back to the Giza pyramids here, because Greg Reese has put together a really outstanding video. It's a little bit under 5 minutes. And his website is Greg Reese, that's R-E-E-S-E, gregreese.substack.com is where you can find all of his content now. I interviewed him a couple months ago, and he had lived in Russia for 6 months. And he's a really intelligent guy, very smart, also very skeptical of, well, everything, including the Trump administration. And he's definitely disillusioned about the future of humanity, but so am I. I'm just able to laugh about it more because I already know that human civilization is pretty much screwed. So I don't have an expectation that's any different from that. So I can laugh about it and write funny songs and you know, have fun, even though I know where this is going. It's not good. It's, you know, most of the human population on the planet right now doesn't make it. And we'll talk about some of those reasons. Let's start with this video here. The scan of the Khafre Pyramid, which is the second largest pyramid in the Giza complex. So check out this video.
Corrado Malanga from the University of Pisa and Filippo Biondi, involved in radar and remote sensing research with the University of Strathclyde, published peer-reviewed research in 2022 via MDPI entitled Synthetic Aperture Radar Doppler Tomography reveals details of undiscovered high-resolution internal structure of the Great Pyramid of Giza. Their research was conducted using SAR data, synthetic aperture radar, along with proprietary software developed by Filippo Biondi that transforms the radar signals into phononic information, which allows for the detection of millimetric vibrations. This cutting-edge technology is capable of revealing underground structures invisible to traditional methods and revealed internal structures never seen before. Having established their expertise in using SAR to explore pyramid structures non-invasively, a recent press release on their current project was released last Saturday. This March 15th press release summarized the key findings in the team's research of the second largest pyramid of the Giza Plateau, known as the Khafre Pyramid, and what they found was astonishing. The analysis of dozens of tomographic SAR images obtained from different angles enabled the 3D reconstruction of inside the pyramid of Khafre and deep beneath the surface of the plateau. Near the base of the pyramid, five identical structures are seen, connected by geometric pathways. Inside each of these are five horizontal levels and a sloping roof. Below these five structures are eight cylindrical structures, which appear to be vertical wells, hollow inside, and surrounded by descending spiral pathways. These eight vertically aligned cylindrical structures, arranged in two parallel rows from north to south, descend to a depth of 648 meters, where they all merge into two large cubic structures, measuring approximately 80 meters per side. The entire structure extends approximately 2 kilometers beneath the surface and extends beneath all three pyramids of the Giza Plateau complex. Mainstream Egyptology tells us that the Giza pyramids were tombs for pharaohs Khufu, Khafre, and Menkaure, and that they were built around 2500 BC using ramps, sledges, and levers. But the redundant mathematics in their construction, which include pi, the golden ratio, and the speed of light, along with the testimony of today's expert architects, suggests that the official story does not hold up. The massive underground structure revealed by the recent SAR data shows what appears to be a mechanical or functional system, and this has been hypothesized in the past. Nikola Tesla believed that the pyramids could harness Earth's natural frequencies. This arguably inspired his experiments in wireless energy transmission and scalar waves. In The Giza Power Plant, Christopher Dunn argued that the Great Pyramid was a power-generating machine using resonant and acoustic forces to convert mechanical stress into electricity. In the Giza Death Star, Joseph Farrell proposed that the Great Pyramid of Giza was a weapon of mass destruction using a type of physics that he calls paleophysics to focus energy as a scalar weapon. The cylindrical wells could be conduits for energy or sound waves, and the cubic structures might serve as energy storage or stabilization units, akin to components in a large-scale weapon or generator. And the detection of vibrations in the pyramid's internal structures reflects all of these ideas. The Khafre project hopes to plan an excavation in order to discover more about this underground structure, but history shows that this will be very difficult to get approval for. Greg Reese reporting.
All right, so this is a game changer about the history of our world and about the cosmos. And if you want to look at that study, the original study was published in 2022. And it's called Synthetic Aperture Radar Doppler Tomography Reveals Details of Undiscovered High-Resolution Internal Structure of the Great Pyramid of Giza. And one of the authors is Filippo Biondi, B-I-O-N-D-I. He's one of the co-founders of Bed Bath & Biondi, it turns out. He's a scientist, and he imaged the Giza Pyramid Complex and found these incredible structures. So I want to bring up the image of these structures. So this frame from the video, now this is a 3D reconstruction from the tomography data. And understand that those yellow spirals are staircases that go, they circle around these columns which are the sort of the dark blue purple columns that extend down, apparently we're told, up to 600 meters below the pyramid. And then they hit these cubes, which are 80 meters on each side. And there's two of them, okay? So these massive cubes, like apparently hollow cubes, or maybe at one time they were filled with water, or maybe they're filled with water right now, but they are definitely cubes. You can imagine all the questions that this is bringing to mind. So in other words, the pyramids that you see on the surface are just the top of a massive, massive structure that goes down up to, there were other quotes in the video and in the paper, up to 2,000 meters, so 2 kilometers deep. That, those of you listening who are geologists, you're going to be thinking right now, like, whoa, the pressure at that depth, the pressure of the rock, the weight of the rock. This isn't something that some third world country just, digs out of the ground with shovels, or even shovels and a bunch of slaves. You can't make this kind of stuff out of just clay. You know what I'm saying? No, it wouldn't last. But these structures are still there. And they're still there thousands of years. Who knows how many thousands of years beyond the date that anybody had a memory of what they were or where they came from. Now you can imagine that these had to be built by clearly an advanced civilization. And there are only two answers to that. It's either an advanced prehistory human civilization or Earth-based civilization, or it's extraterrestrials. And maybe it's a combination. Maybe it's ETs helping humans build this for whatever reason. But this is not something that any modern country could even pull off. This is not within the realm of modern human capabilities. Even with the Boring Company and all the underground cities and everything, this structure, to my knowledge, even the modern day nations couldn't build this structure. Maybe there's some super secret technology that does allow them to do something close to this, but But these structures have been there in Egypt for thousands of years. So somebody built this thousands of years ago, and it's still standing. So then that brings up the obvious question. What is its purpose? So you don't engineer this kind of structure for fun. This isn't a tourist attraction. Hey, walk in dizzying spirals up and down, you know, like 500 flights of stairs to visit a deep underground buried cube. You know, like that's not the tourist attraction. This was built, this was engineered for a specific purpose. And there are a few obvious possibilities of what that could be. One, it could be an energy source or tapping into energy of the earth somehow. So maybe it's an energy generating device. Two, maybe it's an earth defense device. Maybe this can generate a giant beam or something out of the top of the pyramids. I mean, I don't know. Sounds like science fiction. But we don't know what this is. But maybe it was a giant planetary weapon that fired a giant laser beam into approaching alien ships or something. Who knows? Okay. Third thing, maybe it's a communications device that uses a lot of energy for some reason. Maybe it's some other, you know, technology that we can't even fathom right now. Maybe it does transmutation. Maybe it does quantum computing of some kind in some weird way that we don't understand. I mean, it can't be just a deep well. If you were going to build a deep well, you wouldn't build 8 shafts to 2 giant cubes. You would just build 1 shaft because you could access all the water you need from the 1 shaft, right? You wouldn't build 8 columns down 600 meters or more because that would be a lot of extra work for a well. So it's something else. Don't tell Israel about this because they'll think that Hamas is hiding missiles down there and they'll bomb it to smithereens. Got them terrorists, didn't we? No, I'm kidding. I don't think they would bomb Egypt right now. They're too busy bombing Gaza and Lebanon. And Egypt might fight back. You know, that might happen anyway. But back to the Giza pyramids here. What do you think this is? I mean, clearly it's engineered. Clearly it's some kind of technology with a goal-oriented purpose that is not just collecting water. It's something else entirely. And given that it was built thousands of years ago, I ask you the question. Is there any ancient human technology that you know of that could have constructed this? Even just to excavate all of this. What kind of technology existed thousands of years ago to drill a column down through the earth and to reinforce the walls as you're drilling? I mean, look, those of you who are in the petroleum business, you know that when you drill a well, and you drill deep wells like off the ocean rigs, you know, in the Gulf of America, when you're drilling those wells, you can't just keep drilling because they'll collapse on you. You have to reinforce them. And there are really complex methods for doing this. My basic understanding is that they drill a segment, and then they have a way of forming concrete or some kind of reinforcement around the perimeter of the well. And then that gets set, and then they go a little bit deeper, and then they reinforce that segment, and so on. And this continues until they get to their target depth, where hopefully they have oil or gas or whatever. But if you're drilling, I mean, these columns, let's see if that, these columns look like they're about 25 meters in diameter each. That's big. 25 meters in diameter each? So, I mean, what needs to go in there or come out of there that needs a 25-meter diameter hole in the ground, and why do you need 8 of them? And how do you reinforce those walls? See, if this could be excavated, you could go in there right now and look at the materials and try to figure out, like, what is this? Who engineered this? What's it made of? I highly doubt it's concrete, you know? Even though the Romans used a form of concrete that they mixed with seawater because the minerals from seawater created extra strong elemental binding as the concrete cured. But the Romans didn't have rebar. They didn't really know about rebar reinforcement of the concrete. So they just used concrete by itself, which tended to be, you know, more brittle without the rebar. But again, they used seawater to make it stronger. But what's under the Giza pyramids here that can hold these columns together and prevent them from collapsing in upon themselves? Now, I'm not a geologist or a geological engineer, but I could ask AI here about what's the pressure of water at a depth of 600 meters. Now, this is probably different from the pressure of the ground. I don't know if it's higher or lower. I would think water pressure might be higher. I'm just guessing, but who knows? But at 600 meters, water pressure is 8,800 PSI. You know, pounds per square inch. It says that's the equivalent to the weight of 50 Boeing 747 jets on a single person. So that kind of pressure, you know, what kind of materials existed thousands of years ago that could reinforce a column to resist that kind of pressure? And the reason this is relevant is because knowing that this structure exists now, we have to reach some conclusions that may be uncomfortable to some people. That we are not the first advanced civilization on this planet. It's pretty obvious there's an entire period of history that has been wiped from our history books. And some of this evidence seems to be found in interesting building structures all over the world as well. And there are certain structures on the buildings that look like they're energy gathering structures. And there are buildings even in the United States made of marble with exotic architecture and arches and so on that could not be built today. And you're wondering, like, who built these things? Was there a pre-civilization or was there an advanced civilization, like, not even that long ago that somehow disappeared and it's been wiped from our history books? And did that civilization build these giant columns under the pyramids going down to these giant cubes to build a giant machine of some kind that we don't know what it is? So there's a lot of discussion about this relatively recent civilization that vanished. And many people refer to it as Tartaria. And I decided to just ask Grok about this. Like, what is this, you know, relatively recent civilization that vanished? And, you know, this is what some people are talking about. And so Grok, which is doing a little bit of an eye roll here, it says that it's Tartaria is a concept popularized in certain alternative history and conspiracy theory circles. You know, conspiracy theories like vaccines don't protect you and, you know, the government is laundering money. Yeah, it's conspiracy theories. Some people claim that Tartaria was an advanced globe-spanning civilization that existed as recently as the 18th or 19th century, responsible for constructing impressive buildings and technologies before mysteriously vanishing or being erased from historical records. Proponents suggest that structures like grand cathedrals, star forts, and other architectural marvels were actually built by this lost civilization. So this concept of Tartaria is a really interesting rabbit hole to go down. We're not going to do that today. But if you want to, you could go to brighttown.com and just search for Tartaria. That's T-A-R-T-A-R-I-A. Or Rumble has a larger selection of videos about Tartaria. And you'll find videos on things about Tartaria and mud flats or mudslides. And it's supposed that in whatever way, giant mudslides wiped out civilization, which I suppose is possible from a massive meteor strike. You know, it could kind of liquefy the Earth's upper crust. It could actually explain a wipeout of civilization. I'm not saying for sure that this is exactly what happened or when it happened. And I do notice that a lot of people who talk about Tartaria also tend to be advocates of the flat earth theory, which I am not an advocate of that theory, because I believe that satellites work and things like that. But that's a different debate. But the Tartaria concept is definitely worth investigating. And coming back to the pyramids here, you do have to come up with some explanation of how these pyramids got there. I mean, how these substructures got there. You know, what built them? Or what technology, what civilization built them? And the thing, I always say this to people who have interesting theories, and I have interesting theories too, but I always ask others, you know, explain to me how, like, in what worldview does this all make sense to you? If you say that, let's say that there's this ancient civilization, this Tartaria civilization, you know, tell me the story that, in your mind, what happened? How were they wiped out? How was all the evidence wiped out? And they might say, well, all the evidence wasn't wiped out, and many of these buildings are left behind, and we're finding more and more ancient structures, etc., which is true. So they have to have a compelling internal dialogue of sorts, a narrative that makes sense. Well, I ask you, what narrative makes sense surrounding these Giza pyramids here with these substructures? Because the official version of Egyptian history is obviously complete BS. Obviously complete BS. And, you know, the official version of the pyramids is that they're just built by slaves to honor ancient Egyptian kings or emperors or whatever the title is. And they were just tombs, okay? That's nonsense. We know that. They're not just tombs. There's much more to them. But now we have to figure out a new narrative that explains this. Are there ancient civilizations that lived on Mars? Were they interplanetary? Did they come to Earth? Did they transfer knowledge to Earthlings? There's a lot of evidence that that happened. Did they come to Earth as wise men with knowledge of agriculture and mathematics? Did they transfer technology to teach human civilization how to get on its feet and start growing food in the Middle East, you know? or did they give humans the alphabet? Because everything before that was just basically different versions of hieroglyphics. Even the Chinese language is a more advanced form of hieroglyphics, but the alphabet was something totally different. Where did that come from? Well, you know, traditional historians can say, well, it came from here, it was this year, but a lot of that seems to be, it doesn't really make sense. Same thing with the fossil record. You know, where are all the missing fossils between humans and apes, you know? If humans evolved from these primates, then there should be a gradual transition in the fossil record where archaeologists can point to that and say, okay, you know, this year there were apes, and then here, like 2 million years later, it was like 10% closer to modern humans, and then here's more fossils halfway through, etc. It should be a gradual thing linking humans to apes, but that does not exist in the fossil record. Because the fossil record is, I mean, the official explanation of the fossil record is nonsense. Just like the official explanation of our own history is nonsense, or the official explanation of virology, or vaccine science, or even modern economics. It's all BS. It's all BS. Like, we are given frauds every day by the establishment, and we're told to believe this version of history where, you know, the ancient Egyptians, no, they didn't have advanced technology. They just had a bunch of slaves, and they used logs to roll giant, like, 60-ton stone blocks up into the air thousands of meters somehow, and they did this just because the king wanted it done. And we're told just all this nonsense. And they don't admit that the Sphinx, for example, shows all this evidence of water erosion. Water erosion, which means that Egypt had to be in an area with high rainfall. So that's not modern day Egypt, is it? So what happened? Oh, well, Earth shifts, or pole shift. Earth's crust shifted, which could explain the mud flat wipeouts of Tartaria. You see what I'm saying? It also could explain what's written into the Bible, you know, the great deluge, the flood, and Noah's Ark and all of that. And there are similar stories in Native American lore and similar stories in ancient Chinese culture and, you know, all over the world of a giant flood. Was there a wipeout? Was there a pole shift that happened? And was Egypt actually in a rainforest area, a lush area, before all of this happened, whatever this cataclysm was? See, these are questions we have to ask, and I don't claim to have the answer of a consistent narrative that explains all this. To me, these are mysteries. I don't know the answer. But what I do know is that the official answer is complete bunk. We are constantly lied to, obviously, by official sources. They don't want us to know where we came from. They don't want us to know our true history. And by the way, they can fake history. It's not that difficult. All they have to do is rewrite all the history books, and they know that after about three, maybe four generations, nobody has any memory of anybody else who lived, you know, a century ago. Do you know anybody who lived a century ago? I mean, I had a grandmother that lived to 104. So at one point, yeah, she lived 4 years beyond the century. But there aren't very many people like that, are there? So there are a lot of mysteries here, and clearly we are being lied to about a lot of things. Well, I have a feeling that some very interesting disclosure is headed our way. I think that we're about to see some major revelations here. Now, you may recall we played a video of this book review a couple of weeks ago called Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock. And Graham Hancock knows that there's been a big cover-up about ancient civilizations. If you want to watch that video, go to brightlearn.ai. And no, I guess it's about 1 week ago is when we played that. And then we also played a book video called Children of the Matrix by David Icke. But what I want to play for you right now here is a book by Randall Fitzgerald. We've got a little bit under a seven-minute video here. A book review of his book called Alien in the Mirror, Extraterrestrial Contact Theories and Evidence. And maybe we're dealing with an extraterrestrial history of planet Earth. That's not, you know, out of the realm of possibility. So check out this book video. We've also got Our Occulted History by Jim Mars. We played that before, but we're going to play Alien in the Mirror here for you by Randall Fitzgerald. Check it out.
Today, we're taking a journey through the looking glass, exploring the fascinating and often perplexing world of extraterrestrial contact theories and evidence. Our guide on this journey is the thought-provoking book, Alien in the Mirror, Extraterrestrial Contact Theories and Evidence by Randall Fitzgerald. So buckle up, because we're about to embark on a wild ride through the cosmos. Let's start with a question that has intrigued humanity for decades. Why are we being manipulated? This is the opening salvo of Fitzgerald's exploration into the world of UFOs and alien visitation. It all began for him in 1979 when he received a phone call from none other than Stanton Friedman, the world's only nuclear physicist investigating UFOs full-time. Friedman, known for his charismatic lectures titled Flying Saucers Are Real, dropped a bombshell on Fitzgerald, claiming that the 1947 Roswell incident was a cosmic Watergate and that whoever broke the story would win a Pulitzer Prize. Fitzgerald's curiosity was piqued, and he soon found himself interviewing Major Jesse Marcel, the intelligence officer who had been sent to investigate the crash debris near Roswell. Marcel's account was nothing short of extraordinary, describing a crash site strewn with unusual debris and a cover-up that would make any conspiracy theorist's heart race. But Marcel wasn't the only source. Leonard Stringfield, a volunteer with the Civilian UFO Investigative Group, NICAP, provided Fitzgerald with FBI documents and photographs of an alleged alien body, adding fuel to the fire of the Roswell mystery. As Fitzgerald delved deeper into the UFO phenomenon, he encountered a landscape filled with rumors, hoaxes, and a dizzying array of theories. From swamp gas to secret government spycraft, UFOs have been explained away in countless ways. But the stories of crashed saucers and little gray men persisted, with figures like Frank Scully and Dorothy Kilgallen reporting on alleged military retrievals of alien spacecraft and their occupants. The 1950s saw a surge in UFO sightings, with the CIA and Pentagon engaging in a campaign of disinformation and ridicule to calm public fears and confuse the Soviets. Captain Edward Ruppelt, who managed the Air Force's Project Blue Book, confessed that he and his team were ordered to hide sightings and discredit witnesses, even their own pilots. This revelation underscores the extent to which the government was willing to go to control the narrative around UFOs. But the manipulation didn't stop there. In 1997, a declassified CIA study admitted that the agency had used undercover officers to feed disinformation to UFO researchers and witnesses, evaluating how the agency might use the UFO phenomenon in psychological warfare efforts. This admission is a chilling reminder of the government's willingness to manipulate public perception, even at the expense of truth. As we journey through the pages of Alien in the Mirror, we encounter a parade of characters and stories that challenge our understanding of reality. From the Dogon tribe of Mali, who possess astronomical knowledge about the Sirius star system that seems to defy explanation, to the ancient astronaut theories of Erich von Däniken, who suggests that gods and angels were actually extraterrestrial visitors, the book is a treasure trove of intriguing ideas and evidence. The Dogon tribe's knowledge of Sirius B, a star invisible to the naked eye, and its 50-year orbit around Sirius A, raises fascinating questions about how they acquired this information. Was it passed down from ancient civilizations, or did they have contact with extraterrestrial beings? The debate rages on, with skeptics and believers offering competing explanations. Von Däniken's theories, while controversial, have captured the imagination of millions. He argues that ancient texts and artifacts from the pyramids of Egypt to the Nazca lines of Peru are evidence of ancient astronaut visitation. His ideas, while often dismissed by mainstream scholars, have inspired a generation of researchers to question the conventional narratives of human history. But the book doesn't stop at ancient times. It also explores the modern-day implications of UFO sightings and alien abductions. The 1977 Cash Landrum incident, where two women and a child were allegedly injured by a UFO and pursued by a fleet of helicopters, is a case in point. The incident, which resulted in serious health issues for the witnesses, highlights the potential dangers of UFO encounters and the government's apparent reluctance to investigate such incidents thoroughly. As we continue to explore the UFO phenomenon, we encounter the work of researchers like Jacques Vallée and John Keel, who propose that UFOs are not just spacecraft from other planets, but manifestations of a deeper, more complex phenomenon that interacts with human consciousness. Their theories challenge us to rethink our understanding of reality and the nature of the universe. In the end, Alien in the Mirror leaves us with more questions than answers. Are we alone in the universe, or are we being visited by beings from other worlds? Is the government hiding the truth about UFOs, or are we simply witnessing a natural phenomenon that defies easy explanation? The answers remain elusive, but one thing is certain: the quest for truth is a journey worth taking. Thank you for joining me on this cosmic adventure. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. And remember, the truth is out there, waiting to be discovered. Until next time, keep looking up.
This has been a BrightLearn video from brightlearn.ai on the book Alien in the Mirror, Extraterrestrial Contact Theories and Evidence by Randall Fitzgerald. Visit brightlearn.ai for more fascinating videos like this one, and visit naturalnews.com for full editorial coverage and breaking news on critical stories that keep you informed and aware of what's really going on.
Okay, now, along these same lines, we have a book by J. Douglas Kenyon called Forbidden History, Prehistoric Technologies, Extraterrestrial Intervention, and the Suppressed Origins of Civilization. Maybe I should have played this one first, but this will be a very interesting book video. It's about 8 minutes, and this will really leave you asking some big questions. So check this out. Again, it's a book by J. Douglas Kenyon called Forbidden History. Check it out.
Today we're embarking on a journey through time, guided by the fascinating insights from the book Forbidden History, Prehistoric Technologies, Extraterrestrial Intervention, and the Suppressed Origins of Civilization by J. Douglas Kenyon. So, grab your thinking caps and let's get started. Now, when we think about the dawn of civilization, the image that often comes to mind is one of slow, gradual progress. We're told that the wheel was the first great labor-saving invention, revolutionizing primitive society and setting the stage for the great achievements that followed. But what if I told you that this conventional narrative might be just the tip of the iceberg? What if there was an earlier, advanced civilization that existed long before the societies we commonly recognize? This is the tantalizing question that Forbidden History poses. The book argues that the evidence for a great but forgotten fountainhead of civilization is overwhelming. Think about it. If an advanced civilization had existed, wouldn't we find remnants of its highways, bridges, and electrical wiring? Wouldn't we uncover plastic bottles, city dumps, and CD-ROMs? These are, after all, the things we expect future archaeologists to find when they dig up our own civilization. But what if an ancient civilization had developed in a fundamentally different way? What if they harnessed the forces of nature through techniques that we might not even recognize? Imagine a world capable of creating and transmitting energy without a power grid, traveling great distances without internal combustion engines, or making complex calculations without electronic computers. Would we even be able to comprehend such achievements? The book challenges us to consider whether our current understanding of prehistoric society might be just another in a long line of self-serving conceits. It questions the Darwinian uniformitarian view of history, which argues that the world has always worked the way it does now, with everything developing spontaneously over millions of years. This view leaves no room for external forces or catastrophic events that might have shaped our past. On the other side of the debate, we have the catastrophists, who argue that our world is the product of a series of catastrophes. One of the most prominent figures in this camp is the late Russian-American scientist Immanuel Velikovsky. His book Worlds in Collision, published in 1950, caused a sensation by suggesting that Earth and Venus might have once collided, leaving behind a chaotic aftermath that could explain our peculiar history. Now, Velikovsky was ridiculed for his theories, but many of his predictions have since been verified. For instance, he predicted that Venus would be hot, and it turns out that the surface temperature of Venus is around 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. He also predicted that Jupiter emits radio noises, which was confirmed by scientists at the Carnegie Institute. These lucky guesses and coincidences have led some to wonder if Velikovsky was onto something. Velikovsky was a psychoanalyst by profession, and his insights into the psychosociological impacts of cataclysmic events are particularly intriguing. He believed that the psychological condition of planet Earth is one of amnesia. We find ourselves in a near psychotic state, unable to remember the traumatic events of our past due to a collective psychological defense mechanism. This idea of collective amnesia is echoed in the work of Carl Jung, who argued that our greatest aspirations and deepest fears emerge from a vast and mysterious collective unconscious. Velikovsky read the tales of ancient myths as evidence of a monumental, albeit forgotten, ancient tragedy. He believed that our reluctance to honestly explore the past has led to many evils, from the Inquisitions of the Middle Ages to the book burnings of Nazi Germany. The book suggests that our current reluctance to consider the truth of our origins has become codified and institutionalized, It argues that the ruling elite, whether in government, industry, or academia, are determined to thwart any reawakening from this ongoing amnesia. They enforce a collective subconscious wish to keep threatening knowledge out of sight, often justifying this willful blindness with a certain authority, even nobility. But what if this blindness is not just a relic of the past? What if it persists today? The book argues that the ruling elite of today subscribe to a similarly intolerant religion that John Anthony West has called the Church of Progress. This belief system, much like the medieval church's rejection of Galileo's heliocentric model, refuses to acknowledge evidence that challenges its core tenets. Graham Hancock, in an interview with Atlantis Rising, affirmed this view, stating, "The reason we are so screwed up at the beginning of a new century is that we are victims of a planetary amnesia. We have forgotten who we are." This amnesia, he believes, is not just a metaphorical concept, but a real phenomenon that affects our collective psyche. The book proposes that the map we must follow to find our way out of this dilemma is one that can be drawn from our myths, legends, and dreams. It suggests that the real story of our planet's tragic history can be deduced from these mysterious records. For instance, Plato's account of Atlantis in the Timaeus and the Critias is corroborated by the Bible, the Indian legends of Central America, and countless other ancient myths from around the world. Giorgio de Santillana and Hertha von Dechand, in their work Hamlet's Mill, hypothesize that an advanced scientific knowledge was encoded into ancient myth and star lore. They argue that the mythology of many ancient societies is filled with stories of cataclysmic destruction, suggesting that such events are a recurrent feature in the life of Earth and may well happen again. The book concludes with a call to action. It urges us to stop dismissing the extraordinary knowledge passed down from our ancestors and to recapture that heritage. It argues that this knowledge contains vitally important guidance that can help us prevail in the challenges before us. To recover our lost identity, we must remember who we are and where we came from. In the end, forbidden history is a call to awaken from our collective amnesia. It challenges us to question the narratives that have been handed down to us and to explore the possibilities that lie beyond the conventional wisdom. As we delve into the mysteries of our past, we may just find the answers we need to build a better future. Thank you for joining me on this journey through forbidden history. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. And don't forget to check out the book for even more fascinating insights. Until next time, keep questioning, keep exploring, and keep learning.
This has been a Bright Learn video from brightlearn.ai on the book Forbidden History, Prehistoric Technologies, Extraterrestrial Intervention, and the Suppressed Origins of Civilization by J. Douglas Kenyon. Visit brightlearn.ai for more fascinating videos like this one, and visit naturalnews.com for full editorial coverage and breaking news on critical stories that keep you informed and aware of what's really going on.
All right, now we're about to jump into the interview. By the way, was that not a cool book video there? We're going to jump into the interview with Jeremy Corden of the Goldback Company. And, of course, I've been an advocate of Goldbacks since I was introduced to them by none other than Robert Scott Bell. He gave me my first Goldback. And since then, I have given away thousands of Goldbacks. Literally thousands of Goldbacks to many different people. I've become like a Goldback super spreader. Yeah, there's a Goldback outbreak happening in Texas. Who's patient zero? Oh, it's the health ranger. Yeah, well, I guess Robert Scott Bell would be patient zero. I'm patient one. He gave it to me, and then I'm the super spreader. Okay, so that's what I do, is I spread gold around, and I try to educate people about gold. With gold over $3,050 an ounce now, I believe it's critical to understand the importance of having gold in your portfolio, in your possession, as a way to safeguard your assets. Because look what's happened to the dollar. And look at what we just learned about all of ancient history. Civilizations can be wiped out just like that. It can happen really quickly. Currencies can collapse overnight and probably will again. Governments can collapse. Maybe this government will collapse again. You know, I mean, this has probably happened before, is my point. So we're going to jump into this interview here. First, just want to give credit to our sponsors today, Starlink123.com. That's the satellite phone store. They have a package deal with the Starlink company for satellite bandwidth. For business users, it's a really great deal. They make it very affordable. You don't have to buy the hardware up front. Check out the details of their offer at starlink123.com. And they also offer, of course, satellite phones that I would not be without. I always travel with satellite phones, and that's SAT123.com. In addition, I've got a video for you here that I just filmed in the studio, just an update on gut health. I've noticed that a lot of people are having leaky gut issues, hypersensitivity, gluten sensitivity, and a lot of these, I mean, so many of them are really related to gut health problems. And there are answers to that, and there are some supporting nutritional products that can help you with your gut health. So check out this video of sort of what's new, what's available at the Health Ranger store. And then we'll have today's feature interview with Jeremy Corden from Goldback. All right, we've got some new things to share with you here, including my new music album, which we'll talk about in a second. But we have a new docuseries available at brightu.com, which is Brighteon University. It's called Feel Good Gut Health, and it's all about supporting your gut health. And that is running starting March 22nd. And if you sign up for it, it's free to watch. You, of course, you always have the option to purchase it if you want, or you don't have to. You can just watch one episode every day as it goes on a loop each 24 hours, and you can watch the whole thing for free. That's at brightu.com. Now, at our store, healthrangerstore.com, we have an assortment of really high-end products. Some of them are just back in stock that can help also support your natural gut health. And I put a little collection on my desk here. Let me show you. We've got Fermented Super 30. That's on the left side there with the orange label. That is 30 foods and superfoods that are fermented to really express the full nutrient properties of those foods. It's a powder that you can mix in with smoothies and other things. We've also got a probiotic drink mix with kombucha. We have cherry and we have pomegranate flavors. That's what you're seeing there. Those are available right now, healthrangerstore.com. We have NAC capsules, which is really crucial for supporting your body's natural detoxification process, which is also part of supporting your gut health. You have to detoxify your gut, detoxify your blood. And, you know, there are a number of strategies for that, but NAC can help support that natural process. Then we have a new and really popular oat milk product, which has no guar gum, no carrageenan, and it doesn't have any thickeners, and it doesn't have any calcium carbonate in it whatsoever. Because a lot of other oat milk products out there, you're actually drinking chalk. They literally just put chalk in it. That's what calcium carbonate is, to make it milky and white. So if you don't want to drink chalk, but you love oat milk, then get our oat milk at healthrangerstore.com. It's completely chalk-free and carrageenan-free. As well, you're going to love it. We've got clean chlorella there in a couple of different forms. Chlorella has a very strong capability of supporting detoxification and helping to clean out your gut. Just, you know, read the label and consume it as directed. And remember, all of this is part of the feel good gut health theme that we have going on right now. So go to brightu.com to sign up for Feel Good Gut Health. That's free. One other thing I want to show you is that my music album is now available, and it's available at Spotify. We have the Amethios is my artist name. There it is, Amethios. And then we also have the album called The Awakening. And that album has 9 songs on it. One thing that's missing is I Want My Bailout Money. But I've got another song that I'm working on right now called All Our Dreams Come True. And I just brought a little speaker. I'm just going to play a few seconds
of that new song, which will also be available at Spotify and Apple Music and iTunes and iHeartRadio. And did I say Amazon? You can get all these on Amazon.com as well. But I want to play for you a little snippet of the new song that's coming out. It's about human liberty and freedom. I just want to play a little bit of the chorus and the first verse for you here. So we'll do this, and then that'll be the conclusion of this video. Here we go.
If we could comply our way to freedom, then we could bomb our way to peace. We could print our way to riches, give away everything for free. If we could tax our way to liberty and lie our way to truth, then tyrants in big government would make all our dreams come true. A farmer in Montana forced to cull his chicken flocks.
All right, folks, that's a little bit of that song, a little teaser. That's coming out soon. Be sure to follow my album at Spotify or other music services. Enjoy the music. You can also, by the way, let me show you another page. You can go to music.brighttown.com, and there you can see all of the music videos that we have available, and you can download MP3 files there for the songs that we have videos for. Like, here's a video for Do What We Say, which is another new song on that album. So enjoy this music video, which is humanity overcoming the Terminator giant robot mechs in a dystopian sci-fi future. I think you'll really enjoy these songs. They all have a pro-human, pro-liberty focus to them. So thank you for all your support, and shop with us to support us at healthrangerstore.com. Thank you for all your support. Take care. Welcome to today's interview on brighttown.com. And as you can see from my background, we're going to talk about gold today. And we got a great person to talk about that, because he's the founder of the Goldback Company. He's Jeremy Corden, and he's a repeat guest here. He's got a lot of new news about goldbacks, which I always keep on my desk here. Jeremy, welcome to the show. I am handing out goldbacks to people constantly. In fact, I was giving a church sermon this last weekend, and every person that attended the service, I gave them a goldback. It's like reverse tithing, you know? And then my friend Michael Yan, who I've interviewed here many times, he uses goldbacks for bookmarks because he loves books. And he's got a goldback in every book that he's reading. So in addition to all the other benefits, there are many other uses. But welcome to the show today, Jeremy.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate being here.
It's great to have you on. A lot is happening with gold, and also, as I understand it, you know, goldbacks. But you tell us, what do you have going on? What's the latest news?
You know, there's a lot going on with gold prices going up. Right now, we're moving into more states. So it used to be that we'd do maybe one year for a new goldback series, and we could be doing several states this year, and, you know, possibly, you know, three or four next year.
Oh, wow. Is Texas going to be on that list at some point?
You know, we probably get more requests for Texas than any other state for doing a goldback state. And there's two challenges really with Texas. The first is just the size of Texas. It's a lot. It would require quite a bit to pull it off and do it correctly. But when we choose states and we try to figure out where to go, we're really looking for friendly states. And in a lot of ways, Texas checks those boxes. But something that's been keeping us out of Texas is there's a group that's trying to create a bit of a precious metals monopoly with the state of Texas itself that's kind of scared us away from doing a Texas gold back for the next, you know, for foreseeable future.
Huh. Okay. Well, I wasn't aware of that. I know that Texans love gold and silver and oil. I mean, energy and precious metals. What could be better, right? Texas is going to be a very abundant state with what's going on here and all the AI data centers being constructed and, you know, robot factories and everything else.
Sure.
But everybody that I see in Texas loves goldbacks. So, of course, they would welcome a Texas goldback at some point. But I think you've just recently released the Florida line?
Yes. Yeah, so Florida came out back in January, so just about a month and a half ago, and the reception's been incredibly positive. It looks like we're going to be able to run a bill in Florida that gets rid of the sales tax on precious metals. That's below, I want to say it's the $500 threshold. So right now, there aren't sales tax on precious metals, but you have to spend more than $500, and we're going to change that.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right, that's good to know. Okay, well, a lot of great things are happening in Florida and in Texas and really all across America right now. And one of the things that's happening is gold is absolutely skyrocketing. Gold itself is up about 50% since the beginning of 2022. So that means gold backs, because they contain real gold, obviously, are also getting a lot more valuable. So one gold back today, I mean, when I first started talking about these, they were $3 and something each. What are they right now?
You know, I want to say they're pretty close to $6 right now.
Wow.
So if gold doubles, the gold back also doubles. They trade at about double spot, and they're liquid at that price. So, you know, you could buy $500,000 worth of gold backs and be able to sell that and get your money out, where that's not usually true for fractional gold.
Yeah, that's a really important point. So talk about that, because, you know, I've educated my audience a lot about these, but like this gold back contains 1/1,000th of an ounce of gold. And of course, you know, we've done the lab testing to verify the amount of gold and the purity of the gold. It's better than 24 karat gold. And it's a little bit over the required amount. It's about, we showed an average of about 2% excess gold in it, but it's real gold. So now you can actually... Now you have 1/1,000th of an ounce of gold to play with.
So it's a whole series. So if the one has 1/1,000th of an ounce of gold, then the 10 has 1/100th of an ounce of gold.
Right.
And it's interchangeable. So if the one costs $6, then the 10 is $60. So it's a very cash-like form of gold, as a recap for anybody that's not familiar with the gold back. But what I was mentioning with the liquidity is, you know, if you go down that small, and now one of the latest innovations that we've done is the half gold back.
Oh yeah, I just saw that recently, yeah.
So this is 1/2,000th of an ounce of gold.
Right.
And again, it's the same cost above spot as the rest of the gold backs. They're interchangeable with the rest of them. So this is a $3 gold product right here that we're actually pretty excited about, just because it makes gold even more spendable than having your smallest unit be $6.
Well, that's a really important point. I was noticing this too, as gold kept rising. I'm like, you know, one gold back, let's say it's $6 right now. I need better divisibility than that. So the half gold back makes perfect sense. Let me give out the website where people can actually acquire gold backs, and that's verifiedgoldbacks.com. And yes, we do earn a little bit on the gold back purchases. So you're helping to support us on our platform. At the same time, you are getting your hands on real physical gold that is highly divisible. And it shows you all the tests that I personally conducted, these tests to melt them down, and, you know, lab tests. And here's the acid stone test, etc. I have all the results here. Let me scroll down. Here's the printout of here's the actual gold recovery that we tracked out of the gold backs, etc. You can visit that website and you can purchase gold backs through there. And Jeremy, with the 1/2 gold back now being available, is that something that people can purchase today?
Yes. So there's a half gold back, there's a 2, and there's also 100. I'd show you my 100, but I spent it, so I don't have it anymore. So it goes all the way up from a half to 100 now.
Oh, wow.
So it's a bit more versatile than it used to be. We're improving the system with the gold back.
Okay, now, I haven't seen the 2s and I haven't seen the 100s.
Yeah, we'll have to get you some. We'll have to get you some photos so you can put them on verified gold back.
Cool, yeah, that'd be great. It was hard to test the 1 because testing 1/1,000th of an ounce of gold, you know, we have to have a lot of precision to do that. So for the half gold back, we're really going to have to... We'll probably have to put like 10 of them together and do a test.
Yeah, you'll have to put a few together. It'll make it a lot easier. I mean, the half is so thin that you can hold it up to your eye and you can see sources of light through it.
Wow.
Because it's that thin. So it's really something else. in that sense.
So here's the next question. And I want to be very clear to the audience here. I want to put a disclaimer up front. I am not predicting gold prices at any level. Okay. And I'm not saying that anybody should speculate. I always see gold as a place to put assets that tend to just preserve value. But there has been this massive rush of gold out of the Bank of England, bringing it all back to New York, talk of auditing the Federal Reserve, talk of auditing Fort Knox and the other gold vaults, and talk, importantly, among many of the people that we interview, about a possible gold revaluation in America, which may, and I emphasize may, this is not a prediction, this is not investment advice, but it may put gold at something like $20,000 an ounce. And if that were to happen, Jeremy, you would have a whole different problem with gold backs. It's because one gold back would be worth, you know, a whole lot more than it is right now, almost 10 times, or, you know, like 7 or 8 times more than it is right now. So then you'd have a big unit, and you'd have, you know, you see what I'm saying? You'd have to have like a quarter gold back.
Yeah, we'd have to make them smaller. We'd have to make them a lot smaller. We'd have to go down to a quarter gold back or an eighth of a gold back just so it functioned like change.
Right.
Right. If that were the case, if the lowest rung on the gold back got raised up that high, there'd be enough money in the system to make much smaller denominations with some really excellent security features. And that's really what we're looking at doing with the gold back. We want to constantly make it better and add value to the program. Part of that value that we currently add is just liquidity. Normally, if you buy fractional gold, if you go out and you pay for something with a, you know, like a 50% premium, you can expect to get the melt price back a lot of the times, or 10% over melt. And the gold back is in such high demand, it's so liquid that people are paying, you know, 5-10% spreads on it. You know, I know that through Alpine Gold, which, you know, links to verified gold backs, it's 0% spread for the first $10,000.
Oh, wow.
And it's free vaulting on an unlimited number of gold backs.
So people can purchase gold backs and then they get the vaulting for free?
Yes. And that's very unusual.
Long?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but for what duration is that free?
So it's indefinitely. And the reason why that we can offer free vaulting, because free vaulting is very unusual. I mean, we have insurance and, you know, hard costs associated with vaulting. But there's so many different types of gold backs out there that the gold backs that we vault for you, we get to pick what they are. So if we're vaulting 100 or a 50 or a bunch of twos or ones or whatever it is, it's so convenient for us to get to choose what those are when you're vaulting at Alpine Gold that we cover those same vaulting fees, you know, in exchange for that privilege. So we have right. People that literally they have $1 million worth of gold backs and they pay nothing in vaulting fees. Whereas if you were somewhere else, if you were vaulting another form of gold, I mean, you could be paying thousands of dollars a year in just fees, which whittles down how much gold you have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do vault metals and I do pay an annual fee. And yeah, it costs. But I want to pivot a little bit on the fact that the world now here in the post-election era, you know, Trump is the president and it looks like maybe there's going to be the end of war in with, you know, Russia and Ukraine, and that will open up more trade, probably trade with Russia. And what there is right now across the world with Russia, with China, with the U.S. is a rush for physical commodities in your possession. There is a re-domestication of gold, let's say, right? And yet there are a lot of people out there buying ETFs, which is like it's an IOU paper contract that's supposed to give you like a claim to a certain amount of gold. And there are also, of course, ETFs on Bitcoin and things like that. But I just want to get your comments, Jeremy, about the advantages of having the physical gold in your hands in the form of gold backs, which are highly divisible, versus investing in ETFs that have counterparty risk. I mean, that's the issue, is counterparty risk. And clearly the United States of America, the government doesn't trust the counterparty risk of gold vaults in London because they're bringing all the gold home. Why?
Well, they want to make sure that the gold is in Fort Knox.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, a counterparty risk is it's risky, you know, and people with their money, they want to look for things that are less risky when it comes to savings. And that's really what drives a lot of gold purchases, is people fleeing risk. And the big problem with gold is you can't use it as money. If somebody offered me a bar of gold, I wouldn't take it from them, because unless I had a great way to authenticate it, which normally I don't. And I don't think you would either. And I think people in the precious metal space wouldn't, especially people in the precious metal space, because there's just so many counterfeits out there. And that's one of the problems that we address with the gold back. We have a form of gold that has never been faked, that is, you know, just the most high tech you could possibly imagine. And it's a easy to use, easy to spend, easy to barter with form of gold. And you're right, there's an enormous amount of demand. I think people are trying to find the real value, right? It's of people gold. Are in a quest for the real value, because so much of what we use as money is just code and error.
And gold prices have been suppressed by the banks through ETFs and paper contracts. And it's clearly, it's been manipulated for decades. And that manipulation goes on today. Also, I mean, the silver market is famous for manipulation. And I think it's JP Morgan that had to pay a multi-billion dollar settlement with the government for manipulating the silver market price, right? So this isn't a theory. This is how they operate.
Yeah, this is what happens. And it's very profitable to push those prices down. And for whatever reason, the miners put up with it. And, you know, such a small part of the market is physical, where most people are dealing with ETFs, that, you know, having something that's physical in your hand is very powerful. I came into precious metals first with silver, because that's what I could afford 10 years ago as a Ron Paul delegate. And I just loved the idea of using precious metals as money. That was really important to me. And that's what the gold back is all about. It's getting people to circulate and use gold as money. And you're right, you don't have that same counterparty risk. You don't have to worry about, you know, whether the gold is there in Fort Knox, or, you know, how the Federal Reserve is doing with their interest rates, or how the dollar is doing as a a reserve currency internationally. It's just a lot of people are buying gold backs that are fleeing risk, and they're starting to use them because they want to get familiar with using something other than dollars.
Let me mention this to people in case they haven't looked at their money recently, but it says across here at the top. Now, I would argue that this is not money. It doesn't qualify as money, because money has to be a store of value in order to qualify. It doesn't even say that it's money. What it says along the top is Federal Reserve note. What is a Federal Reserve note? It's a debt note to the Federal Reserve. This is debt. Whereas this, goldback, to me, this has real intrinsic value. I think this qualifies better, in my view, as money. Now, I'm not calling it currency. It's not a replacement for the dollar. It's not currency. But in my mind, it's got real value. So in my mind, it's better money than this. And this is losing purchasing power, which is why this is going higher denominated in these, right?
Well, let me ask you, if you had a choice and you could put, if you had a mason jar, would you rather fill that mason jar with goldbacks or an equivalent amount of cash?
Oh, goldbacks, 100%.
If you couldn't open it for 5 years.
Oh, no question.
That's not even hard. I mean, it's, why would you want cash in a mason jar for 10 years or 5 years? It's just going to lose its value. And everybody knows that. And the hope is that you can spend it fast enough where it doesn't sting you right away. But for anyone that has savings, you know, or guess what? Minimum wage is the same and has been the same for a long time. What, decades, 2 decades, 3 decades? You know, it's been a while. And it just doesn't buy what it used to buy. I mean, look at Social Security, you know, the inflation adjustment, you know, arguably doesn't really adjust for true inflation. So, you know, people are getting less. They're getting less and they're getting less because of what's happening with the dollar.
Well, right. Really, I mean, gold and silver have held their purchasing power over generations. I mean, well, I guess really for millennia at this point. Whereas, you know, dollars are clearly headed for the dumpster fire of history. I love a lot of things that Trump is doing, but, you know, he's talking about paying down the national debt. I don't know that that's possible without printing a lot of dollars. I think any exit from our current debt system is going to require massive dollar printing, which is going to dilute the value of the dollars. So I see what Trump and Bessent and Lutnick and what they're all going to do with the Treasury, in my view, I think they're going to roll out a new currency, a dollar backed by gold, and then the existing dollars are going to be hyperinflated to pay off all the debts with worthless hyperinflated dollars. I mean, that's my opinion.
So it's interesting. I mean, Trump's talked a lot about a crypto reserve. He's, you know, asking about, you know, seeing the gold in Fort Knox. It sounds like he's exploring his options.
Yep.
For what a post central banking world could look like. And, you know, he wants to figure out what's available. And, you know, I think right now it's kind of in the discovery phase. If we do go back to a, you know, gold standard, I really hope it's not like the last one, because the last one had an enormous amount of counterparty risk. Because you didn't have the gold in your hand, you had a receipt
right.
for gold that was somewhere else until it wasn't somewhere else. So I really hope we never go back to that system.
Right.
You know, if it's something that looks more like a gold back, and where the gold is in your hand and it's a spendable format that, you know, has never been counterfeited, I think that's really where you want to be.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, Trump should really consider something like the gold back as a parallel national currency, because you're right. Like this Federal Reserve note, it is a proxy for value somewhere else. And actually, like I said, it's actually a debt instrument. I don't want a proxy for value. I want actual value. Like it's here. The metal is right here, and I don't have to trust another party.
I'll teach you something. I'll teach you something really interesting. There is another dollar that's made that is not the Federal Reserve note. And okay. A lot of your viewers might be familiar with it, but it's this coin that is made by the U.S. Mint, and it is a $50 1-ounce gold coin.
What, it's still being made today?
It's still being made today. It's called an American Eagle, and there's also the American Buffalo. The American Eagle was set up. These started getting made in the 1980s.
But you're saying it's labeled as a $50 coin.
No, it is legal tender. It is legally $50. It is legal tender as $50. And the issue with that, these coins, I talked to one of the original lobbyists that was pushing these coins in the 80s. So he's very old now. In fact, I think he might have passed away. And he said that what they wanted to do is they didn't want to put a face value on these gold coins. They wanted them to just circulate as money because, you know, as soon as you put a face value on it, the gold price could be somewhere else.
Right.
And, you know, the IRS went, you know, apocalyptic, so did the Federal Reserve. They did not want gold circulating as legal tender in the United States. So they slapped a $50 value on it when at the time gold was hundreds of dollars an ounce. And what that did is it kind of killed the ability to circulate these gold coins alongside dollars because of that $50 value.
I see.
But here's what's so interesting. There is a guy, there's always an outlier. There's always an oddball somewhere. There was a guy that wanted to push the boundaries of the law. And I'm trying to remember his last name, but he did all of his business with Gold Eagles, all of it. He filed his taxes in Gold Eagles. He did everything in Gold Eagles because they were legal tender, and the IRS drug him to court, and the guy won in federal court. federal courts acknowledged that these U.S. minted gold coins are indeed, they are in fact, legal tender in the United States of America. And what we do with the gold back is we actually peg, we hook, we allow gold backs to be traded for U.S. Minted gold coins. They're negotiable instruments. Every gold back says negotiable instrument, just like a Walmart gift card. And you can redeem a gold back for these gold coins by weight. So we tie in to the true gold standard that exists in the United States, but it's not very practical. And we try to make it more practical with the gold back.
I see. But if people were to trade those in for the US coins, that wouldn't they lose the premium value of the gold back?
Oh yeah, no, they'd lose half their value. No, it would be, that would be not what you want
to
do.
Right, it's better to keep the gold backs.
But it's more of a, it's more of a legal hook than anything.
Understood. Okay, great. Well, this is really fascinating. We're about to wrap this up here for today. I want to remind our audience, the website where you can acquire goldbacks is verifiedgoldbacks.com, and you can just click this button to purchase goldbacks. And of course, the price varies based on the price of gold. And if you think that peace is going to break out in Europe, probably gold will go down that day. If you think that war is going to break out, probably gold will go up. But you know what? Gold itself is holding its value overall. It's the dollars that are fluctuating. So, you know, we describe gold in dollar value. That's kind of the wrong mindset. I think we should describe gold in ounces. You know, how many ounces do you have? But Jeremy, any final thoughts before we wrap this up today?
No, I really appreciate you having me here. I know that you're really interested in a Texas gold back. If this bill fails for, you know, creating a monopoly around the repository, because that's what they're trying to do. If the bill fails, we'll probably push a lot earlier to make a gold back in Texas.
Okay. Well, if that happens, my only request is that you put Longhorn cattle somewhere in the design, because that's part of Texas history.
Gotcha.
There's got to be a Longhorn cow in there somewhere. You know what I'm saying? And remember, the female cows also have the horns. So, you know, get those big horns in there. Pure Texas.
Okay. What else would you want to see on the Texas series?
Well, you know, oil. I mean, like an old oil rig.
Okay.
I mean, Texas is about energy and innovation and history and culture and, you know, self-determination. And if you can capture that in the art of the goldback, that would really be very meaningful to the people of Texas and all those who support Texans. But Texas is positioned to be the economic golden age state for the future of America because it's got all the technology investment coming, AI, robotics, space. It's got, you know, it's got Tesla and it's got oil and energy. And it's got gold, and it's got access, you know, to the Gulf of America now, as it's called.
I mean, Texas, we're very interested in doing Texas. We almost did it. We saw these bills coming up about a year ago, and we pulled back plans that we had for doing Texas.
Uh-huh.
But if they fail, and last time they ran, they failed. I give it a 50-50 chance they fail on their own. But it's SB 665, and then there's a companion bill, or an alternative bill, which is about the same, which is HB 1049. So if those bills fail, I'm going to get to work on a Texas gold back. If they pass, you know, I think Texas could take a lot longer to do.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, keep us posted. And thank you for joining me today, Jeremy. It's been fun. A lot of good information, and thank you for all that you do. Keep rolling these out, and we'll keep spreading the word. The website where you can get these folks is verifiedgoldbacks.com, and that's plural, verifiedgoldbacks.com. And you can acquire these at the current market price, which you can check by clicking this button right here. You can check the prices there. And these are available different states, different denominations, and they all have real physical gold, as is claimed on the gold back itself. So check those out. And thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger of Brighteon.com and naturalnews.com. Take care.